Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want to contact us, send an email to psychologypathwayspodcast, all one word, at gmail.com.
So Aurora, one of the things I encounter a lot is people who come to faculty advising and they have a plan for what they want to do with their life, but sometimes it's not that well informed. And a good example might be veterinarian. Mm. You know, those students don't come to see me, but I've overheard them talking to other advisors. And what they often don't realize is that loving animals will not get you there.
No.
Students who are pre-veterinarian are kind of like pre-med, where they're maybe...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're like a zoology major, biology maybe, and they're already taking difficult science, difficult math. The successful students are already planned out years in advance, and they are aware that it's very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get there, if you become a veterinarian, what you find is that you're there for not just playing with animals, but it's the end of life for a lot of animals you see.
Yeah. Or maybe it's not necessarily the end of life, but it's all these unfortunate things that are happening, like the sores and, you know, cancer and things like that. So, yeah, kidney disease, all of these, you're delivering a lot of bad news.
Yeah. And sometimes the news is we're going to have to put them down.
Yeah.
And so you're really working with people. You know,
yes.
You're working with people a lot.
That's so right. I never thought about that. Yeah.
And these are people that are not happy.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's not what you thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, expectations. What do you think about that?
I think, you know, what uninformed expectations are doing to our psychology students, it just isn't right. It boils down to all the oughts and shoulds that come from everywhere. So the thing that I really struggled with in school was I should be doing this. I ought to be in this area. I should be doing this. And so I had all of these expectations on myself or what I should be doing and what it should look like. And really when I got there, it was just a big...
Yeah.
You know, it was nothing like I expected. So I think a lot of psychology students suffer from that as well.
I mean, these expectations come from everywhere. If I had a dollar for every time someone said, you know, oh, you're an art major, that means you're never going to get a job. Or,
right.
Oh, you're a psychology major, so that must mean you're going to be a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the legislature. You know, the whole reason you went to college is to pay taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get a job, pay taxes, be a citizen.
Right.
They don't care about the liberal arts, or at least it feels that way. I'm sure they do. But it feels like there's just this one track, and the
yes.
track is how. What's the return on investment to you?
Absolutely.
And I think also a lot of these expectations come from ourselves. You know, when you graduate from high school, you have a plan. Or at least you had better have a plan when you're standing around the graduation party, because every person is going to
yes.
say, what are you going to do?
What are you doing? Yeah.
And the correct answer is not, I'm going to work at the big box retail store for a couple years.
Yeah. Kind of figure things out until I realize that I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. You should have a plan of some sort.
Sometimes they're really positive expectations. Sometimes they're really pessimistic expectations. You know, well, what are you going to do with that major? You're not even, you know, you're going to have to go to graduate school. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's nothing wrong with expectations because, you know, I'm glad that there's veterinarians that can take care of my dog.
Absolutely.
But when they're uninformed?
Yeah.
That ain't right.
Nope.
Did you have any uninformed expectations coming into college?
My whole experience, my whole thought of what college should be was incredibly uninformed. It went back to, again, first generation student. My parents didn't go. Their parents didn't go. So I didn't have any kind of role models that went on to higher education. So I took everything from like movies and TV shows, which is not a good gauge for what life really should look like. But it was always strung together in this really positive, yay, yay. They're wearing like their college sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And then when they're studying in the stacks in the library late at night and everything strung together for a, you know, like a music montage,
yeah.
It's all really colorful and it looks really cool and I wanted to be a part of that. And then when I got into college, there was no like musical background happening while I was studying.
No soundtrack.
There was no soundtrack for me and I was super bummed. And so my expectation was very rose-colored. I was thinking that everything will just fall into place, and when I got here it was just like real life. It sucked.
And here's the problem. No one is to blame.
No.
I mean, could you really blame parents?
No.
Because they do whatever they do. They don't do what you might be wanting to do. And can you really blame the university? You know, because they're providing all these opportunities and they know the path to get to where you want to be. Can you blame the legislature? You know, if when you're elected to office in some state and you're thinking about the higher education budget, you're thinking about, I need to have educational attainment go up in my state. Mm-hmm. I need to improve the economy in my state. And so from every direction, from, you know, family, friends, the government, the university, I think people have a good heart and they want you to succeed. I just don't think that people know everything.
No.
And I think that reflecting on my own path, my biggest regret in college and in probably most areas of my life is when I have these uninformed expectations of what I thought it was going to be like, you know, and that goes through everything. You know, you buy a car, you think it's going to be a certain way and it's not. And so I've done a lot of things in my life that I could have done better if I had been in a listening mood and someone had told me the right way to do things. And so I think that that's why I'm a professional development pack rat.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm on the lookout always for answering the very basic questions of, you know, why is everything I start going to be late? And why do I take on too many projects? And how can I write better so that it doesn't get rejected by the editors? All that kind of stuff. So that's, I guess, why we keep suggesting that what you want is inside information and to conduct information interviews.
Yeah.
And find informants. And that's why we call our podcast your portable advising meeting, because we're really on a mission to inform students' expectations. And I think to rip the rug out from under that embarrassment of feeling like I was supposed to know.
Right.
Because, you know, if we can get past the uninformed expectations on the other side, I think a lot of people can be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aurora, what is the most successful or well-attended presentation that you've given for our psychology students in the last couple of years?
So I've over my time in higher ed, I've given a lot of presentations and workshops, mm-hmm. and some of them have been very, you know, well attended. Others, you know, tumbleweeds blowing around. But the one that I always hit out of the park is the number one way to get a job.
Yeah, I'm coming. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Everybody wants to know the big secret. It's a very captivating title. But once students get in the door, I kind of lower the boom.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Is this bait and switch?
This is kind
of. Reframing.
Yeah, it's reframing. But the thing is that everybody wants to know the number one way to get a job. But once they hear what it really is, they go, oh, it's that. And so the kind of the snarl, and they go, ugh.
Oh, well, what is it?
Well, the number one way to get a job is, drum roll, please. Networking. Yay.
Everybody loves networking.
Yeah. So you automatically get that vision of kind of, I don't know, a windowless airport, hotel, conference room with the hello, my name is, and watered down
Gotta
drinks.
Gotta have your name tag.
Gotta have your name tag, and you're having these forced conversations with people. And
handing out business cards.
Yeah, the antiquated business card. Yeah, so when people think of networking, they think of that, or maybe a couple of old guys on the back nine, you know, playing some golf, exchanging some, you know, numbers. But networking really is something that everyone should be doing, especially you as a student. You should be doing it now. And so getting a job is always shrouded in mystery. And so there's always these articles and books of how-tos and, you know, the top 10 ways and the do's and the don'ts of getting a job. But really what it boils down to is networking. And so when we talk about networking, people immediately have their eyes glazed over and they have no idea what that term means. But it's really just a polished umbrella term for like socializing.
Okay.
And for professional and personal gain.
Professional socializing.
Yeah, professional socializing. And it's for your gain in life. So like, has networking ever came into your experience? Have you ever used networking for you?
Yeah, I do a lot of networking, and I think it's mostly because I need human participants for my research, and they generally are going to have a medical condition of some sort, whether it's heart disease or pulmonary disease. And for me, the bottleneck to whether or not I can write research grants or do studies is my relationships. You know, actually, relationships is a nice way of putting networking. I need professional relationships with physicians, nurses, biostatisticians. Yeah. If I don't have relationships, my research enterprise grinds to a halt. And so I do a lot of, I guess it's networking, mm-hmm. Toward that end, you know. And it's one thing I like about networking is that it's just business. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't mean I want to go on vacation with these people necessarily, although right. some of them I really would.
Yeah.
But sometimes I don't feel bad if I bother them a lot or if I'm a little bit demanding because it's just business. It's like we said we were going to write this grant and I'm sending you some parts of it. You need to read it and get it back to me.
Yeah.
And there's actually kind of a tryout for a lot of your professional relationships, you know, where if you know someone and they're supposed to get you an interview at some company and they don't, then maybe you don't know them anymore.
Yeah.
You find someone else.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. That's right. So what about like you look for graduate students for your program?
You know what? We don't really need any networking when it comes to getting into graduate school per se, because we're so fair when we review applications that it really is a matter of what have you presented to me on paper. But I'll tell you this, the way that networking really comes into that is that you generate more applications as a faculty member if you tell all of your professional contacts that you're taking a student.
Your network.
Yeah, your network. It's actually really important to, you know, get your name out there and build your own personal brand as a faculty member if you're in a science. So sure. that way when it's time for people to apply to graduate school, they know that you exist. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of that kind of networking. And I also do a lot of networking on behalf of students when it comes to finding the right opportunities. And so I can't necessarily get you in to graduate school because I know somebody. That's kind of feels shady. Yeah. But I absolutely, since I know people in our department, I know what the different research opportunities are. Mm-hmm. And I might even know some good internships. And I don't know that it really lands you the internship when I say, hey, you ought to go over and talk to this person that I know. But the warm handoff or the introduction really opens doors in terms of now you have the opportunity. I guess what I can do is I can get you the audition.
Exactly.
But you have to pass the audition. And if you're over at the nonprofit mm-hmm. Company and you're failing the audition, then knowing me did not help you get that internship.
And that's the thing. I like the thought of auditioning. It allows you to just stand in the room.
Yeah.
Because you may not have ever, as a student, may not have ever known about that opportunity to even stand in the room with other qualified candidates.
Yeah.
But because you did the soft handout, the handoff, you were able to put that person in the room, and then they kind of have to take it from there. For me personally, networking has worked out amazingly. There was definitely a season in my life where I was looking for employment, and as an individual looking for employment, it's a challenge. But I had a whole team of people actually out looking for a job for me. And so I call these people, I lovingly refer to them as my starting five.
Your team.
It's my team. So just like in basketball, you have this entire team that could possibly work for you, but you only put the most valuable players at that given time to start off. And so I had five people that were kind of on the beat, and whenever an opportunity of a job that would come across their desk or through email, they would immediately forward it to me and say, think about this, I'll put a phone call in for you, blah, blah, blah. And that just, it didn't land me the job, but it did make my resume come to the top of the pile. Mm-hmm. And it, when someone's vouching for me and saying, this person is good.
Yeah.
That carries a lot of weight. And you don't realize how much weight that actually carries until you are up against, 200 other applicants. But when somebody that you already know knows them and you go, oh, okay, she looks pretty good.
You bring up two very important points. The first thing you brought up was that your network will find things for you. And that, I think, you put your finger on it. I mean, that is the number one thing for me with having a professional network is that they will be aware of opportunities. They will have ideas. Mm-hmm. And they will tell me about their research ideas or know about opportunities or find different grants we could apply for. And without having the professional contacts, you don't have anybody searching for you. And
right.
then the other thing that you said is that your reference check is a lot better if they know your reference. So you still have to pass the audition. But I do think I realize now that if I actually know the person that you worked with and then you're applying to graduate school here, I absolutely check references. And if I have never heard of where you're coming from, then sometimes I don't bother that much. I read the letter.
Mm-hmm.
But if I know them, I'll ask. And then a lot of times, for better or worse, you'll find out exactly what's going on
yeah.
with that applicant. And that's a lot more powerful than you know, just someone that you've never heard of. So I agree that the checking references, it'll get you to the audition, but then you still have mm-hmm. to pass.
And it's a confirmation. If you're looking at two, like coming from an employer standpoint, if you're looking at two resumes and this person is just a name with a bunch of experiences, but this person, it's a name with a bunch of experiences and they've already worked with a bunch of people that you already know, or mm-hmm. maybe you've come in contact with that person before and you know that they are have a good reputation and that they're a hard worker and things, that's going to weigh a lot more in the ultimate
it
decision
does.
Of whether I'm going to have you come in for an interview.
And one thing I'll point out, since we're psychology students here, is that even if people think that they're being completely fair and unbiased, the reality is it does carry some weight that you know someone and if like that person, you know.
Yeah.
If the person writing your reference letter is someone that I really don't like, it's probably bad.
yeah. yeah.
But if they're someone that I like, whether or not I have any conscious awareness that that's influencing me, it's got to have an influence.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that I refer to my starting five. Mm-hmm. These are my network of people. You have your own name. What do you call your people?
Yeah, I call them my professional people net. And I made that up as a metaphor for the book because I wanted to point out that, you know, you search the internet for opportunities and you do a deep dive into the internet to get information on graduate programs and jobs and mm-hmm. careers. And but people were the original internet. Before there was an internet, there was the, you know, your
network. Yeah, the PeopleNet.
Yeah, your PeopleNet, and they will search for you. Like, I was so glad you said that you had five people that would, you know, tell you about the same job.
Yes.
That's when it's really clicking, and your web is out there catching everything and sending it your way.
Yeah, and that's really what it ended up coming down to. There would be certain opportunities and I would get the same email from like four or five different people, and it was amazing because they were actually out there looking. They were on the beat. They were looking for me. And it, as you mentioned, online, it's not just in-person contacts. This mm-hmm. can be virtually. You know, you have a virtual presence as well. So just like you have a Facebook, a Twitter, an Instagram, this is social media. These are social networking platforms. So networking is already built in there. I don't know if you realize it, but it is networking.
It is.
But you can utilize social networking platforms in a professional purpose. So I have a LinkedIn account. I know that you do too.
Yeah. I don't like LinkedIn that much, but I know that you're supposed to accept all requests on LinkedIn because, again, it's just business.
Right.
You don't have to like these people, and they're not going to find out about your personal life.
Yeah.
Like on Facebook, they might. But on LinkedIn, it's just being connected as much as possible so that you find out about opportunities. And I don't really curate my LinkedIn page that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that some people, depending on what occupation you're in, it's very serious business.
Yeah.
And in fact, we could do a deep dive into your brand, but I know that everybody has to have kind of a personal brand mm-hmm. and to think about curating what they've done online a little bit.
Right.
I don't remember if it's still around, but someone made an app at Kent State University that would alert you to things that they found on your social networking that you maybe don't want to have there.
Oh, scary.
Yes. And so that picture of you, you know, at the bottom of the 15-foot funnel when they're... pouring the Everclear straight down from the balcony, and you're standing there in your shorts on spring break. Maybe that one's got to come down.
Maybe.
If the employers are going to find it.
Unless you're trying to get a job with a beer company or something.
Yeah, even then. Wow.
Yeah. But like LinkedIn, it's very, I think it's awesome. It's Facebook with a suit. It is your social resume. Do I use it every day? No. It's not like a regular social platform where you're kind of interacting with people and giving updates. But there are, like you mentioned,
you
people
don't put
that,
your dog pictures.
No, you don't put your dog pictures. You don't tell them that you're going on vacation. You put stuff up like you went to a professional conference, that you read this article. You know, this professional article, and then you can repost that.
I think the main reason that I don't use LinkedIn is because I have tenure. And so if you have a job and you intend to be here till you retire, then suddenly the
it's
value
like
of LinkedIn is not quite the
Supreme Court
justice same.
Position. Yeah. You're a lifer.
Oh, not necessarily. You'd be amazed at how little protection tenure can afford. But I get the point. People think it's lifetime employment, and I just have nothing to sell. You know, I'm not hungry, and so I'm not looking for new opportunities.
Right.
in the Chicago area. And I do get emails saying that they're looking for this and that. And it's like, well, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But if you were starting out or if you were in a profession that, you know, people switch careers a lot.
Absolutely.
And you kind of have to in the 21st century. And so for the vast majority of psychology students, having an intelligent LinkedIn profile is probably a really good idea.
It's a great idea. And if you were to see my LinkedIn profile, I mean, or the people that I'm connected to, it's a real who's who of who cares. But when I need them,
yeah,
there's a strategy behind it. I know that I can access them. And again, you know, you briefly mentioned about possibly spring cleaning your social media accounts, because there is a brand there. So we can definitely do a deep dive into that. So I want to talk about a little bit about the article that I saw on LinkedIn that revealed that 85% of critical jobs are filled via networking of some sort.
And do you know where you could put your hands on this article?
I could track it down.
Let's track it down and put it in the show notes.
Okay.
So that if you look online, you can see, like, here is the article we were talking about.
Yeah. And I've also seen other comparative studies that put the percentages up into the 90s. And even I was reading an article that was posted on Psychology Today that was written a few years back. And it talks about it's not what you know, it's who you know, and whose fault is that? So, I mean, it's
your fault.
It's your fault. And it's just the way the world works. Even though it's an old adage, it's still, regardless of advances in the digital age and the evolution of society, it is all about who you know.
It really is. I think that the top two reasons in my imagination for why it's so important is because you never even hear about the opportunities if you don't have a network.
Yeah.
And so there's the, like, information gathering and opportunity discovering a value of your professional people net, as I like to put it. And then there's also the social validation, if you know someone, friend of a friend kind of thing, that really greases the wheels of maybe I'll take that meeting.
Yeah.
Like, I do a lot of networking when I want to meet someone that I would like to work with, or that I'd like to find out if I'd like to work with them. And for me to cold call, I've done it. You know, I've cold called people.
That's
absolutely
scary to do the cold call.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you have to, but it's better when it's when there's a lubricant there.
Yeah.
Just a relationship with someone else.
But if I know somebody, my favorite is the friend of a friend concept.
Yeah.
It's, I don't have to know you, but if I know someone who knows you.
Name dropping.
Then, well, a little better than that. We're not talking about the person that wanders around saying, oh, yes, when Freud and I you know, and Jung were hanging out, you know, in Germany. It's like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about if you know someone that says, hey, could you introduce me to this person? And I think, again, it's just business. And so we can't bring the same level of anxiety and reticence to networking that we bring to a normal relationship.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm auditioning someone to be my friend and hang out with me, that's a really different situation than if I want to recruit people with cystic fibrosis for a study.
That's it. Yeah, very different.
Then I'm looking for, I'm looking for a physician in the right specialty, you know. And it's like, I will literally email all my colleagues and say, does anyone know, you know, like a pediatric rheumatologist or something? If that's what I need, then that's what I need.
Yeah.
And if I get a warm handoff, you know, if someone does a introduction via email, probably they're going to take the call.
Yeah.
But if I cold call, often they never do.
Right.
And I'll still cold call. I'm pretty brutal when it comes to, or maybe bold. I mean, I'll throw it out there because it's worth it to me. And actually, one thing I've learned is that if you email authors of books that you like, they get very few emails unless they're really, really famous.
They do. Yeah.
I mean, Malcolm Gladwell's not going to email me back.
Mm-hmm.
But you come a few rungs down the ladder and you find someone that wrote a book that you really liked. And often you can email them and they will email back.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So what if somebody read your book and emailed you?
No one has done that yet. Maybe you'll prompt the first email I'll ever get. Although I'll tell you this, I emailed the authors of two meta-analyses that I read on a topic, and they both emailed back, and I was so impressed.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, because this is, like, these are pretty big articles that came out in an important area to me, and I said, I'm going to check with these people because I have questions.
Yeah.
And they emailed right back, because we almost never get emails as researchers unless you're really, really famous. And so I'm okay with cold calling. And my point is that throw away your anxiety and your reluctance. Just throw it out there, because it's just business. And if you screw it up, so what?
So what?
They live in, you know, 2,000 miles away in some other state. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you emailed them or you called them or you, you know, ran into them at a conference and spilled coffee down yourself. It's fine. I've done that. I've had the really awkward stare-offs where I was trying to make small talk and it just didn't go anywhere.
Nonversations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I got over it because I realized that, you know, I was just trying to meet this person.
Right.
And sometimes they're awesome and sometimes they're not.
And there you go. The thing is just, you mentioned before, is that word relationship. Mm-hmm. It's forming that professional relationship. So networking, really, it's a concept that you just don't do it once. It's an ongoing art form. It's like planting a seed. I kill everything that I get a hold of, except for my cat and my kid, thank God. But
so mammals you're good with, but plants are
going to
die?
Plants are going to die because I don't come back and I don't nurture it. I don't feed it and water it and take care of it the way that it should be. But like networking is kind of that way.
Have you ever declared plant bankruptcy? Where you just throw them all out and start over?
Yeah, actually, the office that I'm in now already had like a bunch of big plants.
Uh-huh.
And someone was taking care of it while it was sitting there empty. But when I moved in, they just all of a sudden died.
Yeah. I've declared plant bankruptcy over and over again, but I don't declare bankruptcy on my networking.
No, because it's a seed that you plant, and just like a regular seed, you don't plant it and then you turn around and there's a flower, a big blooming garden. But over time, if you water it and nurture it, eventually it will bloom into something that you can use to your advantage. And I know that sounds kind of selfish, but hello. You know, you kind of have to watch out for yourself and you need other people to help you out.
So what's the best time to plant your vineyard of grapes?
Now.
Or
yesterday.
10 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're not going to be having grapes for several years.
Exactly.
And so in the same sense, I think it's never too early to start networking.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to have a close personal relationship with all these people. And you start with who you know, and then you start with who they know. You know, you just move on.
Start branching
friends
out.
Of a friend,
mm-hmm.
a friend of a friend. And then that's what you do at conferences, by the way. Everything important at the conference will be in the literature eventually. And so the point of a conference is not to read all the posters and to sit through all the talks, although you should. The point of the conference is to see the people behind the studies and then to talk to them if possible and meet people, meet peers. You know, mm-hmm. meet professors, mm-hmm. meet researchers, meet everybody you can, and be unfailingly nice to everyone, including the staff, the volunteers. You know,
everyone,
people notice.
Yes.
People notice if you're like rude to the volunteers working behind the registration booth, mm-hmm. but you're nice to the researchers.
That's right.
They
that word spreads like cancer.
Yeah. Especially when you're applying for a job. If you're really rude to the secretary, there are companies where everyone that you talk to has veto power. Did you know that?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there are companies where they will find out everyone that you've spoken with while you were there for the interview for, you know, half a day. And mm-hmm. if the people in the office say, wow, this person was terrible, then that's no good because they know that it will come out eventually.
Yeah.
And so I guess part of networking is being unfailingly polite at a professional level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be their best friend, but you can't be a cruel, terrible person or word will get out.
Yeah. So here's some take-home points. Remember, the number one way to get a job is networking. So now that you know that networking is really forming professional relationships for your personal gain, now it's not such a scary
word. No stigma.
Word. There's no stigma. There's no scary.
It's not sleazy.
Yeah, it's not schmoozing.
Business.
Yeah, it's just business to help you get
you
to where
what?
You want to go.
People want to do business.
They do.
They actually do. They want to do research. And so when I come to them and say, hey, I have this idea, let's write a grant, they're usually not like, you know, why would you talk to me?
No.
And if they do, then I know to stay away.
Yeah, because this is normal. This is the way the world works. And it is about who you know. As sad as that may be, as connected as we are, it really does come down to relationships. It is about who you know. And planting those seeds for networking early and often.
So here's a little factoid about people who graduate with a PhD in psychology.
Mm.
Half of their first jobs are in the state where they got their PhD or the state where they did their APA-approved clinical internship.
Oh, wow.
Half. Now, part of that is because they want to stay in the area maybe, but I think another part of that is because it's about who you know.
Yeah.
And so I didn't intend for that to be true for me because I did a national job search, but you know, I got my degree in Ohio and I'm in Ohio still. And so I think that's hysterical that, you know, there's like it's like a virus, you know, information about opportunity spreads from person to person.
Yeah.
So it really is about who you know, even when people are being as above board and fair as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.